Okay, now changing gear completely, moving to IFRS 8, Nadia. So, agenda paper 5.
I'm reassured to see that Nadia is now drinking water. As compared to yesterday night.
I don't think we'll comment.
A poor joke.
Patrick's leading us straight.
Okay.
Part of the team.
Yeah.
So Michelle's showing by her body language that she's part of this team, so she's moving closer to Nadia. It's not that she's trying to get away from me, just for the avoidance of doubt.
Yeah.
It's a story anyway. Okay, Nadia.
IFRS 8, disclosure draft, amendments to IFRS 8, second reporting. First, I'll provide you some background very briefly. The board published the exposure draft of the proposed amendments to IFRS 8 in March 2017. As you have probably seen, the board decided to retain the management approach in IFRS 8. There are 9 proposed amendments in total, 8 proposed amendments to IFRS 8 and 1 proposed amendment to IAS 34, to be more specific. All proposals are based on feedback that the board received during its post-implementation review of IFRS 8. For our discussion today, we have chosen four proposed amendments which we believe are most relevant for preparers. And they're highlighted on slide number 8. And I'll explain briefly why we're focusing on preparers as opposed to like users and regulators and as a general rule. So far, since we published the exposure draft in March, we have had quite a number of outreach events with both preparers and users, and especially with users of financial statements, because as you, I'm sure, know, users have a lot of interest in this topic. And during our discussions with users, if I summarize the feedback that we have received so far, I think they see this amendment as not something like overly exciting, you know, it's not groundbreaking, but overall positive and sensible and reasonable, and they see the intention of the board to be helpful to users in terms of improving information about segment reporting. Preparers, however, is a different bunch. They're obviously the people who will have to deal with these disclosures and these amendments, and they'll have to implement them. So they look at the amendments with different set of eyes. So this is why we wanted to encourage you to provide us with the responses that preparers might have and your views, as I said, from that angle. Having said that, if you have any other observations or views, or if you want to make any other proposals other than the four highlighted proposed amendments, by any means, feel free to do so, but maybe it would be better to do it at the end of the session, as opposed to my agenda. So, with all that said, I suggest we move on to the first proposed amendment that we would like to discuss, which is clarifications that we propose to make to IFRS 8 with the intention to clarify how to identify a chief operating decision maker or another, or CODM, which is the term that I'm going to use quite a lot today.
Linda?
Well, so we do a fair amount of outreach and discussion on this in Canada, and the feedback we're getting is pretty consistent between their discussions with preparers, auditors, and the view of the ACSB. We're trying to better understand the need for some of the clarification around the CODM. We're not seeing these issues in Canada in terms of a difficulty of identifying the CODM, nor do we typically get into the discussion of whether it's an individual or a group of individuals, or the need to really look at the composition of a group if it's determined to be a group. So we're intrigued by the notion of non-voting members, et cetera. And we're actually a little bit concerned that the way the discussion's being read by some in Canada, that it seems to suggest that you would have a subset of the board, or the board is the CODM, and that's in direct conflict with our view that the board is a governance organization, and they're not making operating decisions. They're the board, so they're governing management. It's management who's making the operating decisions. So we understand that there may be differences in other jurisdictions, and we're sympathetic to that, but we're also, we would care about how it's worded and how it's presented, such that it doesn't create an issue within our own jurisdiction. So in general, some concern with the approach that's being taken and the focus on the CODM. Are we stopping at this question right now?
Yes, I think so. You want to go through question by question, Nadia?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Thanks, Linda. Chris?
So there has been some issues in Australia about who the CODM is, so we were quite pleased that you were trying to address it. But we've probably still got, I think, reasonably similar concerns, is it's not quite clear whether you're really focusing on operating or strategic decision making. And for example, some people would see allocating resources as being strategic, and the BC seems to suggest that the board also saw it that way. But it then seems to imply that you have to have both operating and strategic decision making to be the CODM. And I think if that's what you intend, then that's what you should say. So allocating resources shouldn't be surrogate for whether you really mean strategic pieces. And if you really just want operating, but you think allocating resources is a subset of that that's important, then we'd suggest it should be operating, including the allocation of resources. So it's still not quite clear what you're actually driving at. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, similar comments. So there certainly are application issues in our region, and I think that the challenge is a lot more where you've got, you know, at a consolidated level of a, you know, multinational organisation, where this is seriously one CODM that consolidated level, and I guess that this is the concern. And so therefore, you know, although there's now some emphasis on operating, it's, well, so what is operating? So I think there's still some confusion as to what that level is, because I mean, in a sort of at every level where, you know, let's say the operations are actually happening, there's decision making. Now once you move all the way up to the, you know, the listed entity, they're going to receive, you know, far less detailed information, far, you know, more aggregated information than down at that lower level. So it's really not clear, I don't think, when it says, well, there's only one CODM. As I say, I think there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of what that level, you know, really is. And so maybe some of these examples and possible situations need to be considered, and whether or not there's some guidance that's been provided to give some further insight. I think some comments where, yeah, the standard, you know, refers to, well, in many cases or whatever, you know, it could be the CEO or the board of directors, and I think some similar concerns around saying, well, you know, are they really making operating decisions? Now, in South Africa, at a board level, you need the majority of your board being non-executive directors. So again, there's this view to say, well, they're not making operating decisions. And then also, we did find it a little bit strange to then say, well, maybe the operating decisions are made by a smaller grouping of that board, so the executives, and then you conclude the overall board is still that CODM. And so, so we're not quite sure if that really provides clarity. So I think there could be a sense that people default to the board because that's maybe easy, but then there's this uncertainty around saying, but goodness, there's such aggregated information given at that level. Our users are wanting more disaggregated information, so then we're going to provide this other information. So not too sure if it's really that clear to most people, including regulators, as to, are we really hitting the mark in providing clarity there?
Okay, thanks.
Andrew? FLAG's draft comment letter is open for comment until the 17th this month, so we haven't had that much feedback yet, but the discussion we've had so far has been very similar to what Chris said at all. We really do want to emphasise the responsibility for operating decisions, then this could perhaps be working more in that direction. We do make a suggestion in the draft comment letter. I think there are issues in the European context with two-tier board structures and that kind of thing.
Andreas?
So to just follow from Andrew's last comment, I think that there are different board structures. You have a monistic board, you have a two-tier board structure. So for us, board of directors works perfectly because our board of directors consists only of exec directors. So then it does make sense. But I echo Kimberly's comments as to once you look at it from a group level, it becomes completely arbitrary who the chief operating decision maker is. Because usually the decisions are being taken within a legal entity somewhere further down. Yeah. They may be aggregated, and certainly they might be superimposed by some strategic view, but I wouldn't regard that as being operating, really. So that's where it becomes a bit fuzzy.
So maybe what we have is an issue with terminology. So, for instance, you say you have a board that's only management.
Yes.
We wouldn't call that a board of directors. And we would call it things like the executive committee, the executive, like the group executive, things like that. But we wouldn't call it a board of directors, but it clearly exists. Mm-hmm. And in many entities, that would be the CODM. Mm-hmm.
So and that's what we were trying to address in the clarifications from my memory.
So when I was reading the description to clarify, and I don't know if the use of the word "and" in here, I should be putting as much emphasis on it as I am, but it said operating decisions and decisions about allocating resources and assessing the performance of. And I just wondered to what extent some of those activities are separated, and thinking in the context of a university environment that I'm familiar with, the colleges, the deans of the colleges make the decisions, the operating decisions, and they assess performance. It's at the president's office that they're going to assess performance also and decide on allocating resources to the colleges. So there isn't any entity within that has all three of those operating decisions and decisions about allocating resources and assessing performance. So I just wondered, to the extent that those ands are important, okay, what do you do in that sort of a situation? Okay. So that was one point. Second point is on one of the things that we're just starting to do some research on is how technology and changes in technology are changing access to information and the information that is available to be regularly reviewed and the implications for that for the application of the guidance. Because it seems that with the systems as they're evolving, much more matrix oriented, there's different ways of looking at information, different abilities to access information, and so the question becomes then what is actually regularly reviewed by the chief operating decision makers. So we're just starting to have some conversations about that. And we did have in the invitation to comment the idea that we should shift more to a governance perspective to push the CODM more up into the board of directors as opposed to at a lower level, but that was opposed pretty much by the majority of respondents to the invitation to comment, the biggest concern being that it would result in fewer segments. And there wasn't a lot of appetite for that. The users want more segments, not fewer segments.
And thanks for giving us such specific comments and the feedback. I think that's helpful. Nadia, the next three questions, if I'm reading correctly, all relate to the proposed Amendment 5. So I wonder whether it would be possible to sort of group them for people to give us feedback, but while pointing out the fact that we're interested in all of those aspects.
I'll make an observation about this CODM amendment, not just this specific amendment 1, but this first group, which is numbers 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and slide number 8. Based on the feedback that we have been receiving so far from preparers, it appears that by making these amendments to IFRS 8, we actually raised more questions than we gave answers. And I think, and it is quite a. And I'm just, from the standard setting point of view, it's not the question that we asked in the slides, I'm just asking it as kind of, we go along with our discussion. Is it something like you can comment upon, recommend something? Like, do you think the board should be proceeding with this amendment?
Well, I think Christina's made some good points about how we need to look at the drafting of that question. So I think for us it's going to be a case of going back and trying to understand what originally gave. Because we even need to come into the project, so going back and seeing what was in the post-implementation review that we were trying to clarify, taking the feedback and then looking at how we've drafted that amendment.
Yeah. Okay. Just an observation based on the feedback that we received so far. It does pose lots of questions. Okay, moving on to the next proposed amendment, which is link of IFRS 8 segments with the annual reporting package. And we're moving on to slide number 13, and then 14 and 15. This amendment relates to a very well-known issue when sometimes companies report, let's say, one report reporting segment in the financial statements, so the annual report, let's say, and you see many more operating segments. And the question often arises why there is such a discrepancy between two sets of financial information. And this is the issue that investors actually and regulators and auditors raised during the PIR, and that's the issue that the board has been trying to address. And the board is proposing to have a requirement in IFRS 8 to explain the difference when such difference exists between the financial statements and other parts of the annual report. And as you, I'm sure, have seen, the board also has introduced this notion of the annual reporting package. So the companies would reconcile or compare operating segments not just within the annual report, but with other financial information as well, which we call annual reporting package, which is much broader notion than just the annual report. So as I said, there are two parts to this proposal, and so we would appreciate your views.
I think they're on slide 18.
Just before we open it up for discussion, the board knew when we were proposing this that we were being a bit edgy, to use a technical word, expanding to the annual reporting process. We really want to try and do something to help with this, because this is really big concern of securities regulators and investors. So if you're going to tell me you don't like this idea on the annual reporting package, can I just preempt that with suggestions for other ways that we could introduce something that would achieve the sort of discipline that we're aiming for would be very helpful.
Can I just add to this observation? Actually, this whole proposal turns out to be quite controversial with preparers, because not only do they question the annual reporting package, they don't question the whole idea of reconciling information, because it's not something that we have historically, or the board has historically done. And so highlight Sue's point, this whole recommendation has become quite controversial so far, especially with preparers. Users are quite supportive, but preparers, get quite excited about it.
So looking for constructive suggestions. Linda.
So I don't know if I have constructive, but in any event, so if you were to look at the securities regulators, they issue reports annually about their continuous disclosure reviews. And remember, Canada has a large number of foreign private issuers, and so we also pay attention to what the SEC does in terms of continuous disclosure reviews. Segments appears near the top of the list. If it's not number one, it's usually number two, on a pretty regular basis if you go back a number of years. So I just took a quick look over the last few years. And what that's led to in Canada, I think, is a general improvement in segment reporting because it's been the focus of enforcement. So typically what we would see would be a consistency in the segments between the financial statement footnote, the MD&A, and other structured presentations like investor analyst stuff, investor presentations and stuff like that. And but what you would see in the MD&A and those other presentations outside of the footnotes is a disaggregation of what they typically refer to as business units or lines of business. There's different terms used, but basically you'd see, you know, in banking, the retail banking segment, and that might be broken down into three or four discrete parts to explain better explain the results of the big giant retail banking. So we typically see that, and it's gotten better over the last few years. So the reaction that our folks had to this was, oh, now we're worried that they're going to encourage us to invent different segments. So in some cases, we would need to talk to folks about what the intent behind this was, because I think the intent is exactly what we've been seeing in Canada, largely because of the actions of the securities regulators. So that's kind of where we are right now. So I'm supportive of what you're trying to achieve, but I started out by saying I'm not sure I have constructive suggestions other than awareness and education. The reference to the annual reporting package did raise some concerns from the auditors around, okay, what work would they now need to do if the entity is describing this reconciliation in their financial statements? Do they need to go look at all those documents to be able to say that that is an auditable statement? So there is, I think, an assurance issue here. And so in some cases, folks said, is this an application issue? Like, is your gap okay now, but it's really an application issue?
Thank you.
A lot of support for getting companies to explain the reconciling items, though.
Can I just ask a clarifying question?
Yeah.
So you said the business units weren't in the financial statement note disclosures.
They might be. I would say it's not like some companies do a really good job of saying, okay, you know, we're going to, the retail banking would be in these business units, and they give some detailed disaggregation in the note that translates to the MD&A, and some other cases don't.
But you don't think that would still be reported to the CODN?
Well, that goes back again to the first question.
Well, yeah.
So who is the CODM, and therefore what is that level of aggregation that is provided? So, you know, I think those two, to me, are so interrelated because, just going back to the first question about the CODM, some of the concerns that were raised was to say, oh, goodness, if it is right up there, then sure, we're reducing the number of segments that we must report. And that could also give rise to maybe some of these issues where they're saying, oh, you're forcing us to only disclose those segments, but then elsewhere in our MD&A and elsewhere, we're going to report on all of these business units. And then you're saying, but why is there a difference? And it could be, again, identifying that level of the CODM.
Was that what you put your card to say, or do
okay,
I?
Okay, well, as I said, maybe just to finish, I think, yeah, I mean, as you said, I guess there are some concerns that Mr. Linda raised around defining the boundaries of that annual reporting package and saying, well, gosh, how do you know if you've considered everything? But I certainly think that, you know, it is good to get that reconciliation, but as I say, it could be informative of maybe they haven't got the right CODM and therefore the number of segments, and that's the reason why it's different. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, clearly, if they are, you know, abusing the standards to not disclose certain information when they should be, there's a concern. But it could also say just be trying to say, well, we're trying to follow what the standard says, because then you often get comments to say, no, but our users are asking for more information. So even though we don't report this to the CODM, because it's, again, it's this uncertainty of where that line is. Yeah.
Chris, you wanted to not just ask Linda a question?
Well, we're sort of tying into that. So certainly we've heard there's some audit concerns. But I'd have to say in practice, because our regulator, ASIC, is actually already pushing this disclosure, but more from outside the financial statements, not so much inside the financial statements. There has been a marked improvement in segment reporting in Australia. So I think it's, for the reasons that you talked about, it's absolutely the right thing. But maybe the wording in the standard is perhaps if you're disclosing more segments outside, then you need to go back and have another think about whether or not you've actually got the right CIDM.
So, but I think the use of the word segment is an issue because there's reportable in the gap, there's reportable segments and operating segments.
Yep.
Okay. And I am not saying that a business unit is a segment under the gap. And I think that's where you really got to clarify the terminology.
I just have to.
Andrew.
Well, we have reservations in our draft comment letter, and we don't have other suggestions as to how to do this thing differently. I'm not quite sure what actually is the problem you're trying to solve. I'm well aware of some enforcement bodies fairly regularly questioning companies when they've identified or report different segment information in the front half or the back half, so to speak. That's sometimes in the context of their enforcement activities and that runs its course, and if companies for some reason were complying with RFS 8, then there are mechanisms of audit and enforcement to get them to do so. So if the ISP is trying to use this as a sort of enforcement tool, then why just this, and how does that relate to your broader responsibility for setting the standards versus enforcing the standards? A suggestion is that users find it confusing to have different segments identified. We've actually heard some users anyway, so if this in practice would actually sort of stop companies reporting different types of segment information in the front half and the back half, that could result in a net overall loss of information, which would not necessarily be welcome. And also question, maybe there's an underlying suggestion that because IFRS 8 takes a management approach, there should be no differences in principle. I don't buy that.
Well, I think that's the market expectation. And maybe that's a wrong expectation, but I think that's where the question comes from.
Yeah. Well, management approach is almost a marketing term. It's a particular management approach focused on the 3-4 person known as the CODA, but then there are specific aggregation criteria which are going to be helpfully clarified in this document. There could be different management perspectives that can be reflected in the front half, and there can be different approaches to aggregation reflected in the front half. And if the problem is somehow that the front half is inherently misleading or wrong, well, that's the responsibility of those who set requirements and enforce requirements for the front half. So we'll see what the comment letters reveal, but preliminary reservations is the message.
Okay, thank you. Not too surprised. Andreas.
So I joined the camp of the non-constructive people.
That badge with pride.
So I think we acknowledge what you're trying to achieve, but we disagree with the method, how you're trying to achieve it. I must say there is strong conceptual resistance in having a reconciliation requirement embedded in IFRS 8 if you disclose something differently somewhere else, because to me it defies logic that you have a standard that tells you exactly how to do your segment reporting and you've complied with that and say this is IFRS complete, full done, and now you make me explain why I've done something else somewhere else where there is no requirement to do it exactly the same way as an IFRS 8. So to me it is I could see it the other way around. If you didn't apply IFRS 8 correctly, well, then I would say to the auditors and the enforcers, that's the correct camp to deal with this. But don't make me explain why I have duly followed IFRS 8 in the first place. So if I've done something different in other parts of the reporting package, then let the regulators deal with that, because it's in their remit to do it. It's not for the standard setter.
But because this argument comes up all the time, I just would like to clarify, why do you believe it's regulators the main to deal with this issue?
Because
why wasn't it in the SB's mandate, for example?
Because you in IFRS 8 are defining what segments I ought to report on. You may question whether I've done it correctly, mm-hmm. but that's a different issue. I think that's then for the audit profession and the enforcers to pick up. But if I come from the perspective that, yes, I followed everything that's being mandated by me, so I've complied with IFRSs, why shall I now explain that outside of the financial statements, I'm not, quote-unquote, complying with IFRSs? There is no requirement for me to do it.
I understand your point, but... and it's a long time since we discussed this at the board, so I can't remember the background terribly well, but I think that it all started with a sort of, to go to Andrew's observation, which I think is the right one, the expectation of the market, I think, was that what would be used to describe results to investors, etc., would be consistent with this management view, and that's sort of the whole logic behind the focus on the chief operating decision maker, because why the heck would you look at it completely different to manage the place than to explain it to investors? And so I think that securities regulators are frustrated when that's not the outcome. Even though we've written it that way in IFRS 8, we thought that was going to be the outcome. So they're looking for us to help them. And at the moment, based on what's in IFRS 8, I think they feel hamstrung to get improvements. So it's interesting what you say about where in Australia and Canada they actually seem to have been able to do something about it, even with what we've already got. But I think they're looking for something extra that helps them enforce it to get the result that was anticipated.
Well, then there is, I think...
But I think it might come down to, is it something wrong with the way the CODM's described?
The CODM and the segment, potentially, because it may be the combination of the two.
Yeah. So maybe that's what we need to look at.
Well, and I think that the point Andrew made as well, because if you've decided to emphasise a particular product line in the MD&A for a particular reason that year... then you just need, I think, what we were trying to do was to make sure that a reader could understand which operating segment that was in. And I think that was where we went. We got a lot of pushback from GPF on this proposal because of the fact we were going wider, and they saw that as meaning their regulatory reports as well. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of... And that concern I could understand, that, you know, don't want to do it to our... I think one company have to report their mind, and they were saying, you know, that's just too far down, and I could understand that, but providing some clarity between the front end and just because reasonably you've emphasised a particular activity in a year and what's in the financial statement doesn't seem inappropriate. It seems like it's more clarifying what we were saying in our first study.
But if you think so, I mean, why don't you believe that you would have to report that under IS1 already? I mean, there is a general proviso that says if something is so important, you have to go beyond. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah. Yukia.
Thank you. We think any difference between segment identified in the financial statement and the segment identified in other parts of... annual reporting package should be explained in those other parts of annual reporting package. We think ISB should focus on information provided within the financial statement, and therefore we do not think the proposal is appropriate. Preparers in our jurisdiction are concerned that the definition of annual reporting package is too broad, and that because not all information provided under this definition is issued when the financial statements are prepared, it is impractical to comply with this requirement.
Thank you. Cedric?
Thank you. Well, we join the comments that have been made on the reconciliation. We support reconciliation, but think it should be done outside of the financial statement. We share the view expressed by Andrew previously and you that we assume that the definition of the aggregate segment should be the same under IFRS 8 and in another part of the financial information. And actually, we are not sure that the suggestion which has been made to amend paragraph 12 and 12A, introducing and strengthening the criteria for aggregating segments, may not lead to more divergence in that area. So maybe it would not help. In the
end. You think it might help? Okay. Christine.
So I think similar to what others have said, I struggled a little bit with trying to figure out what the problem was that we were trying to solve with the disclosure requirement. If what's going on is in the footnotes, the breakdown is, let's say, segment A, B, C, but when you get to the front part, it's segments E, F, G, then that's potentially very confusing to investors, and it would suggest a problem that needs to be solved with the guidance on how to segment. If we think E, F, G are actually the right segments, how are we getting to A, B, C in the when we follow the guidance? On the other hand, if what we have in the footnote is ABC, and in the front half we also have ABC, but a further breakdown of ABC, which is what Linda was describing, if we think that the finer partitioning is the better way of providing the disclosures, and we would like to see that finer partitioning in the footnote, then it's the aggregation criteria that would need to be looked at and refined in order to get that finer partitioning. Now, one of the reasons why they might want to, at least in the U.S., provide the finer partitioning in the MD&A but not in the footnote is because of the audit requirement and the cost of auditing that additional level of detail. So I think just thinking, I have no problem with the disclosure per se, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily going to get at the heart of the issue, if there is one.
But I think the problem is that the problem is multi-faced. It can be that the aggregation is more
so maybe both
detailed in the front half. Or it might be that this is ABC and then XYZ plus ABC, it can be like a combination of problems. So, and I think the intention was to help users to get from one point to another, but by explaining how all these ABCs and XYZ link in. And there might be different reasons for the difference.
But I'm not sure how a user is necessarily going to use that qualitative disclosure, because let's say that you tell me that, a piece of A is showing up in EFG. Well, I don't know with that, I don't know how to translate that into numbers that then allows me to really do a comparison of the financial data in the back part of the financial statements to whatever's appearing in the front part. So it seems like the ultimate goal should be to try to get greater alignment if that's what we think is going to be helpful to users.
I was members understand why the board made this proposal linking IFRS statements with the annual reporting package. However, they raised some concerns. Firstly, they are afraid this proposal could create an incentive for entities to report the same segment information both for the financial statements and the annual reporting package, to avoid the burden of explaining the difference between the two documents. And specifically, there would be two ways in which this mechanism plays out. One way is that entities try to conform the segments in the annual reporting package to the segment in the financial statements, and this alignment may lead to not providing sufficiently detailed segment information to users of the annual reporting package, because normally those users are a targeted group who need more specific information than general users of the financial statement. Another way is the opposite direction. Entities try to conform the segments in the financial statements to the segments in the annual reporting package, and this alignment may lead to providing too detailed information regardless of materiality and the core principles of IFRS. And second concern is that this proposal may impose unreasonable burden on preparers and auditors. As for preparers, it seems onerous to identify all the difference between segments in the financial statements and those in the non-GAAP data. As for auditors, this would mean that they have to explain the reliability and accuracy of the information in the annual reporting package as well. And thirdly, they are uncertain whether it is the ambit of the ISP to mandate an entity to explain any inconsistency identified outside the financial statements, given that reports presented outside financial statements are outside the scope of IFRS. So they are concerned that this proposal would create a precedent that future amendments to IFRS might require entities to explain other differences outside the financial statements. Having said that, they think that if the ISP decides to proceed with this proposal, they want to suggest an alternative, which is to require entities to disclose the difference between the segments in the financial statement and those in the annual reports, rather than annual reporting package. Mm-hmm. And this narrowing down the scope would relieve the burden on preparers, auditors. So that's the comment from AOC.
Thank you. That's a constructive suggestion.
Annual reporting.
Alberto.
Where does the problem arise? The problem arises because companies have a tendency to interpret their way who is the chief decision officer and how to aggregate segment in order to give in the financial statement information about very, very large segments. The number of empirical review of financial statements that I've done is that the segment reported in the financial statement are very few in numbers, much less than one would expect. But the analysts and investors want more information. They know that they have done this super aggregation, and so they want more information. And they give it in other documents, as you mentioned. The situation is well reflected in your slide 15, where in the financial statement you have two big segments. In other part, you assume, I assume this is a real-life example, but even not, it doesn't matter. There are four segments. So it's bad habits. They do not respect the spirit and the requirements of IFRS 8. So what I would suggest is when you say in your new paragraph 19A that an entity is expected to identify the same reportable segment in financial aid, I would recommend to strongly say unless exceptional circumstances, an entity is expected to, etc. And then requiring, if these exceptional circumstances arise, to give an explanation without a reconciliation, because if this is the problem, less segment than expected, the only reconciliation is go back and apply IFRS in the proper way. So give all this information. What other reconciliation is needed? That would be my suggestion.
Thank you. Alexandra.
Yes. People in my jurisdiction struggle a little bit about the problem, which was a point that Christine mentioned before. And especially when you use inconsistent information across communication channels. And what people said about the most common problem is exactly what Alberto mentioned. You just give more detailed information and other parts of that situation when you give really inconsistent information, which is you have A and B, and then you have D and F, which doesn't connect, is for them a the idea that this was a kind of is a problem for enforcement. So because it would be inconsistent with IFRS to discuss with investors to present your company using F and G and saying that this is the relevant information, and you using the footnotes A and B. Why is that? Because you should adopt a management approach according to IFRS. So it would be very unlikely to have a management approach. This is the way I manage the company. This is the relevant economic significant way. And then I present to investors a completely different story, which is a more problem of misleading information, maybe intentionally misleading information. So that really inconsistent thing would be more a problem of enforcement than anything else. And the real more common problem is just people giving more information because it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. You don't have to prepare everything, you have to prepare the whole footnotes, they don't have the same level of auditing. So I believe we should differentiate these two situations, these two problems.
Conscious of time, but I can see Kim wants to come back and Chris is also.
Well, I just wanted, I guess, just to respond, because I mean, I certainly, you know, agree that if companies are, you know, clearly providing information which is misleading, well, there's a problem. But maybe just using Linda's example of the banking, to me, I think the issue is that, you know, is your segment for IFRS 8, as Linda mentioned, retail banking. And then in the front part, you might then be showing three different business units that say make up retail banking. The question is should the segments in IFRS 8 be those business units? So it's not a case of providing completely.
But that's the case of more detail. That's more usual.
It might not be an aggregation issue because if your starting point is CODM is there, maybe they only look at retail banking, which means that is your segment. But if you were to come in down here and you say, well, this is your CODM is down here, then you might get into saying my operating segments initially are the business units. Then you look to see whether or not you can or should aggregate under IFRS 8. But if you've really started at the top, you're not aggregating anything. You are starting there. So I think to me that's the issue, as opposed to providing completely,
I mean, there is obviously an issue of compliance with IFRS 8 and how you apply it. But besides that, there is still, we believe, there is this still issue of inconsistent information.
I think it goes back, and maybe this is what the PRR has highlighted, is the practical application of it. And depending upon how you are applying it could lead to what is perceived to be differences. So again, our regulator as well would look up front and see, my goodness, you've got, you know, six business units. And then you go look at the IFRS 8, and then you only have two segments. And you go, no, hang on a second, you know, you're trying to mislead people. You don't want to provide all this detailed information.
IFRS 8 is a very judgmental standard. That's where management uses lots of judgment in terms of who CODM is, how to aggregate, and that's the nature of the beast. It's not like 2 + 2 = 4 kind of standard. You know, it's not. It is based on judgment, and I think that's why it's difficult to pin and say, oh, you should have 4 segments or 6 or 8 or whatever the number is.
Yeah, but I think some
agree. But it sounds like there's perhaps what's been useful is understanding in different jurisdictions how terminology is used and how it's been interpreted, because I think, again, you know, what was interesting is you say you've got a two-tier board and you've actually got like a management committee, if you like, which you're seeing perhaps as your CODM. Now, in my jurisdiction, if you refer to the board, you're talking about this top level. And then you say, but goodness, those are very, very different. And so if you're saying, well, what information is reported at this level, it is far more aggregated at that level.
So I think I'm just conscious of time. I think that people are making some good points about whether we're sort of over-relying, in a sense, on this sort of stick that we've come up with that people may or may not like, and whether we need to look a little bit more, and we may have done it in the past, but look again at whether the CODM definition, the aggregation criteria, mm-hmm. and also how come some regulators in some places can deal with what we've already written and seem to get a good result and others can't. And maybe those three things are things to think about a bit more deeply in addition to just this
I think that's
all right. Confusion about what you're asking for, because some people seem to think you're actually asking for a reconciliation, whereas I don't read that at all.
It's an explanation.
Yeah. Sorry, I've clarity on that as well. And how useful that is to Christine's point. Okay, so Nadia, with time considerations, yeah. Moving forward.
Yeah, moving forward, which is actually picking up on your last point in terms of dealing with the application of IFRS 8 by itself, underlying principles and guidance of IFRS 8, and in order to provide more meaningful information about what segment entities have. We also propose, or the board proposes, to strengthen the aggregation criteria within IFRS 8 itself. So we're not talking about financial statements and information outside of financial statements. We're actually talking about application of IFRS 8 in this specific amendment. And basically, the intention is to strengthen the aggregation criteria so that entities wouldn't over-aggregate and would provide more meaningful information about the operating segments. And that's what this proposal is about, and it deals primarily with paragraph 12 of current IFRS 8. And there are three changes in this proposal. And basically, the most significant one, like we restructured the paragraph to make the principles more apparent, more obvious. But also, like the most significant change, I think, relates to the long-term economic characteristics. Mm-hmm. And current IFRS 8 has only one example, like where entities should be similar in terms of their long-term economic characteristics. But now the board proposes to have more examples. And it also says that entities should be similar across a range of those long-term economic characteristics for the entities to be able to aggregate operating segments into reportable segments. So that's the proposal. And the question is on slide 23.
Andrew, so aggregation question.
So our draft comment letter expresses support for this change. But in the discussions, there has been something of a mixed response. Some would see it as, I think, Maddie, your phrase was a helpful but unexciting clarification, whereas others would see this as perhaps driving this more into a sort of rules-based approach. I was intrigued by your picture, which I assume is impressionistic, not figurative. It's suggesting that somehow these, if they're simple clarifications, but they're going to double the number of reportable segments. That's an interesting conundrum, but I'll leave that with you.
Christine. So the FASB's also been looking at potential improvements to the aggregation criteria. We had a meeting on May 24th where we discussed the feedback that we had gotten on segment reporting issues from the invitation to comment. And from users, we heard that they would prefer criteria that were more rigorous, less judgmental, and resulted in a finer partitioning, so similar to your circle with more with more segments. From practitioners and preparers, we heard that they wanted more clarity around issues such as whether the criteria should be evaluated quantitatively or qualitatively, how various criteria should be weighted, and what degree of similarity would be considered sufficient to put pieces together. We didn't make any decisions at that meeting. We did agree that the looking at segment reporting could be addressed independently of the larger performance reporting project, which I think is similar to a decision that you guys have made. The alternatives that are currently being explored by our staff in terms of improving the aggregation criteria include emphasizing financial characteristics like financial returns in the definition of economic characteristics, which I think, again, is similar to some of the discussion that you've been having. Moving the quantitative thresholds for determining a reportable segment to form part of the aggregation criteria. So basically, that would impose a bright line threshold that any operating segment that accounted for at least 10% of revenues, assets, or profits would have to be separately disclosed, and then the aggregation criteria would just be applied to whatever was left over. So that's one approach. Another approach that we're having the staff investigate is potentially just removing the aggregation criteria altogether,
but keeping the practical limit guidance. So that would say that you would have to, an entity would have to report all of their operating segments unless the number exceeds X, whatever X might be, let's say 10. The concern there is that you could end up with, you know, 9 operating segments and then a huge leftover residual amount. And so that's one of the issues that we're thinking about.
Thank you. Nadia?
Yeah. Moving on to the final proposal for today's discussion. This is about our amendment to IS34. And this proposal deals with situations when entities change the segments, for valid reasons. Yeah? From, let's say, ABC, they want to ABCD for some valid reasons. This is no kind of misapplication or anything of that sort. So we're in complete compliance situation right now. So they go to different number of segments, let's say. And currently, IS34 tells you to disclose restated comparative information for the similar prior period, which will be in June 30th. So what this amendment proposes to do, given that moving on to September, you will have to provide September, so you wouldn't wait until that September in June, so and you provide restated comparative information for June and September and December of the prior year, so that the investors would have this information, restated information earlier, instead of waiting for the whole annual cycle to accumulate those restated interim financials to have trend analysis. And that's what this proposal is about. And we say travelers would need to do that unless the information is not available and the cost to develop it would be excessive. So they have a little bit of practicability exemption, if you will.
Yuki? Thank
you. Preparers are concerned with the cost associated with the proposal disclosure of restating the segment information in the interim report. Preparers in our jurisdiction are required to prepare quarterly financial statement, and they are indicated that they have much more work to do within a shorter time period compared to the preparers who are required to prepare semi-annual financial statement.
Okay, thank you.
So generally speaking, best in class in Canada would have preparers doing this now. And the only question that came up was regard to, if you require it, what's the related assurance knockoff impact? And basically they do it now because the investor relations function has mandated it for them because their investors asked for it. So the question becomes is if they issue their first interim report, they're going to include it in that interim report. What are the associated assurance issues? So I'd suggest you get some feedback from some of the auditors for the audit firms.
Okay, thank you.
I can just ask just a sort of a clarification question. What I wasn't sure of is, in your first interim report, are you required to also give the full previous year's information restated? Would that be the requirement?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what they're proposing.
So it's not just the interim periods would also be the annual period.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Everything we need, Nadia?
So, thank you for your feedback. So it seems that there are lots of compliance issues flying around with this specific standard, and as I said, thank you again for your feedback, and will be reported to the board in due course later this year.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll take a break now until 11:35.